Section number 17629, Mr. David Ridley, Reel 7.
Mr. Ridley, Reel 7. With the 17th Battalion, which we've been talking about, Mr. Ridley, were there civilians around and about you that would relate to you in any way? Did you get that opportunity?
Not related to us, but I made quite a lot of good friends. In fact, this Caperley Fern I'm talking about, I was in a bungalow like these here, and a lady next door called Mrs. Salmon. Her husband was in Malta at the time in the Air Force, and we became very good friends. And in fact, 2 years ago, I was rooting through my army documents, and I found her address, and I sent her a Christmas card. And she phoned me, and she must have been on the phone an hour, Christmas morning, just to wish us, and talk about old times. And if I ever go in that direction again, I'll go and meet her. I did go and meet her once when I was with the Army Cadet Force in Folks, and we were there for a fortnight. And I went and visited Mrs. Salmon, and I went beyond that to Dover to miss my niece's. Her husband was in the Marines, but she was quite pleased to see her. Like. And I've got a postcard, a Christmas card there ready to send next month. So there was a few major or prominent people that stopped in Folsom, but most of the civilians were taken out. But postmistress, postmaster, they stopped, police and all that. And in fact, it was what they call a restricted area. You weren't allowed to take any civilians in. At least the Army wasn't. Yet the Air Force and the Navy could take their wives down. So being a naughty boy, I said to my missus, I says, I'll take you down there for a holiday. So she was down in Folkestone for 3 weeks. And we're up in this Caperley Fern, and she stopped with this Mrs. Salmon. And in the period of that, the local copper said, who's this? And he stopped her. And he belonged to Northumberland, this policeman. He says, well, look, he says, you're not allowed to be here. Never mind about the Air Force, anything like that. He says, you are not allowed to be here. He says, tell your husband, I'll not do anything about it, providing you go home tomorrow. So I had to send her home.
That must have been particularly annoying when you saw other units, as it were.
It was, yes. But then again, it's just like I read an article there about females in the armed forces. I don't know. It's like having your wives. You see, if anything was happening, my wife is there, my first natural instinct would be towards my wife, not to the regiment, would it? And this is the sort of thing I think you're getting in with females being in the armed forces. I don't know. Certain jobs, yes, but not taken over.
Did you get involved with the training the local Home Guard?
Yes, yes.
How did you find them?
Oh, very, very keen. Very keen up to 12 o'clock. But the pub opened at 12 o'clock, see? So you could train them, you could run them silly up to 12 o'clock. So never travel. No, right, come on to the pub. We all used to go to the pub. It never used to cost us anything, mate. But they were very good. And it amazed me as well, some of the weapons that they were invented. You used to have a cannon, and it was on two wheels. Right? You had to fire it, you had to turn it over, and the bottom wheel became a turret, so you could swing it.
Homemade thing, was it?
Homemade, yes.
What kind of people were in the Home Guard? I'm thinking in terms of age and background.
Nearly all elderly men. There was odd young ones, but they were, you know, on working in a restricted job. But they were all middle-aged men, I would say. But very keen, like, and I think they were, you know, they were shown a lot of resistance if Germany didn't invade it.
You felt that they were capable of doing that?
Yes, they were very good. When they were only armed with rifles, they used to lay traps, like tank traps, like you say, a cutting. They would line it with pipes, which were perforated with holes, and that was all coupled up with a big tank of diesel and petrol. And if a tank was coming that way, say, they used to release the diesel and set fire to it. That sort of thing they used to do. They did a lot of patrolling at night for paratroopers and by German airmen, you know, when they were raiding London and places like that, they were getting brought down, and, you know, if they came down in a parachute, they were, 9 times out of 10, it was the Home Guard that used to take them prisoner. But they were very good, like.
And you say you got actually were involved in that training with them.
Yes, well, we, instead of training recruits, you were training Home Guard. Because, they were recruits.
Was it drill training or field training?
No. It was all field training. Mostly weapons. Weapons and grenades. I don't think we were capable of doing any drill anyway at that age.
Did they get involved with any manoeuvres with you?
What?
Did they get involved in any manoeuvres that you might be doing?
No, I can't recall ever doing any manoeuvres with the Home Guard. I tell you, what we did do with the 17th Battalion was do enemy for everybody that was invading France. In fact, when the French raided Dieppe, we had to do...
The Canadians went to Dieppe.
We had to do enemy for them. And that was the time when I was telling you I did a forced march of 50 miles, non-stop. And it was against these French Canadians. And then at other times, with the 17th Battalion, we used to always have exercises. We would have maybe a week's exercise, and the civilian population were warned that they had not to give us anything. Because, after all, the civilian population were always there with the cups of tea and sandwiches. But on special occasions, they were warned that they had not to give us anything. We had to feed off what the army issued. And the only trouble with that was heart attack. I couldn't eat heart attack because I had false teeth. And after a period of time, the gums were like, you know, they were lanced to pieces. And all I lived off was beans or something like that.
When you were on these manoeuvres or helping with the French Canadians, were you also involved with other units? Were tanks in these manoeuvres, for example?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
And did the Air Force come in?
Not a great lot with tanks, because tanks did such a terrible lot of damage. And in fact, I was once on one manoeuvre, and all this, I was guarding this farmhouse, and the fields were all, the corn was, in those days, stooked, you know, in rows and rows of corn. And this blowing chap come down with a tank. Instead of coming down between the rows of corn, he came right over the blooming top and destroying it all, which was a blooming stupid, in my opinion. I mean, the farmers were compensated for it, but why destroy things? It's something like the modern youth these days. All they want to do is destroy. Well, in that particular instance, he was still driving his tank. He wasn't trying to avoid any anti-tank fire or anything. He could have come down between the rows. But tanks were, and a lot of brand carriers were involved.
Were you training with infantry tank support at any time, or was this still in the future?
Yes, I didn't do a great lot of that, did I?
And what communication had you between, say, an infantry unit and a tank?
Well, you had the normal radios, which were blooming useless. The 33 set was, if somebody walked in front of you, it used to go off. But on the back of the tank, there was a button, and you pressed this button, and it rang a bell or something in the turret. and you, there was a telephone at the back, and you could talk to the commander. That was one. Or you had to have hand signals. Or we didn't do a great lot of training in that respect, though. And I never went into action with tanks.
Did you get any training with air support at all?
Yes, uh-huh. But then again, it was very limited because, I mean, it was all needed for the defence of these raiders keep coming across the channel.
Naval support, did you get anything with those?
No, I had nothing to do with the Navy. What I used to do was I used to go and train the Air Force as well. I used to go up the local, at Forks, there's an aerodrome there. There was a fight aerodrome. You used to go there and train. And I taught about basic training. I was seeing me trying to teach this chap how to fire a rifle. He would send out in the range to fire a rifle, and he couldn't even hold a rifle. I had to lie on the ground and hold a rifle in his shoulder myself. Anyway, we started to teach him about rifles and grenades, but nothing elaborate.
This would be to help them with Air Force airfield defence.
Uh-huh.
Was this before the RAF regiment had been formed?
Before, I was just going to say that. Later on, the RAF regiment came in and they sort of took over all that sort of thing.
We've mentioned manoeuvres there. Were there any very large-scale manoeuvres that you got involved in?
Large scale. Oh, yes, uh-huh. One of the major ones I was in was a rehearsal for the D-Day landing. And what happened there, they brought all these troops through the Middle Edge, down through Kent and all that, and they passed through places like Folkestone. And I remember I was, my subject I never liked, I was put in charge of the gas squad. I had six men with a 3-ton trick and loads of powder and all that to sprinkle around. Anyway, we were stationed at the Lees at Forks in a massive hotel, and that was equipped from top to bottom to absorb these troops. Even they had a great big operating theatre in there. Beautiful. But what happened there, the troops used to come through, they were fed, given rations, and taken down and put onto the landing craft and taken out to sea so far and then turned around and brought them back. And you name it, if you wanted it, you just ask. Because you were like the static people supporting these troops. And I remember one instance was in the Leeds. The first lot came in, we didn't have anything to cut the bread. They were sawing away there for about 3,000 troops, you know. You can imagine just what it was like trying to cut bread for 3,000 troops. So we applied for a bread cutter. You know what they sent us? They sent us five baking machines, great big, massive. Oh, they cut bread like, but great big baking machines. It cost a small fortune. I always remember that part.
So you were providing this support for these people
for
coming
for these troops, yes. They used to come. They used to be bringing them down in stages through the country, you know. And then eventually they came into the port, were fed and put on a boat. And that was preparing for D-Day.
And you were the opposition for their landings, practicing their landing?
Oh, no. I never saw them landing. I don't know
I mean, when they were coming and they were in effect training, you said that you helped in that training. There was a maneuver which you helped them in. You said that when I asked you about if you've been any large-scale manoeuvres, you said, well, got involved with the French Canadians prior to, before.
Well, that was the major one that that's all I was involved in. So I was on the static staff. And once they left the hotel and went down on the board, so I said, I don't know where they went after that. As far as I know, they took them about 5 or 6 miles out to sea and then brought them back. They couldn't land in Forks landing because everything was all mined there. But there's one interesting point. When I was going back in the tape where I've never known this happen before, where recruits were sent to a battalion. I was in Forks at the time. and I had this squad of recruits. And right opposite my billet was a church with a square tower with a clock on it. And I always remember this. And I'd round the clock, I had, "Trifle not thy time is short." And how very appropriate it is. Now that, we used to parade from all over folks to this church for church parade every Sunday morning. And it must have been, there was some spies in Folkestone, because 20 minutes before church parade, a dive bomber come over and dropped a bomb right on this church. It killed about two people, but if it had been 20 minutes later, it would have got hundreds of troops. But I always remember that one.
Did you get involved in clearing up after bombing raids around the Folkestone area?
No, I didn't.
There's nothing dropped on the barracks itself.
Well, there was, but not. You see, these Messerschmitts didn't carry a very big bomb. we were always getting. You'd be standing on parade, ready, go on guard duty, and over would come and smash them in, and everywhere would scatter, and he'd drop one small bomb, but it never involved. I was never involved in it.
Any major parades that you got involved with? Did you get visited by high-ranking people?
Well, we did, but we didn't have parades. Normally, we were sent, and it was nearly all NCOs. We were sent from A to B. One of these things was when General Montgomery came. I don't think it was in Folkestone. It might have been Ashford or somewhere like that. But all the NCOs had to go there. And this was the time when he was giving lectures about battle drill, when he was bringing out battle drill. Because in the old days, of lining up in rows and marching forward with your red, there must have been Roman crackers in those days. And I mean, I don't think you had to train a recruit how to shoot. I mean, you get a block of 100 men marching towards your shoulder to shoulder, you couldn't miss. But he brought out this battle train where, you dropped a section here and the other section went flying around the battle and all that. In fact, that's how I think he won a lot of battles, by leapfrogging, getting wrong behind the enemy.
Were you impressed with this man?
Yes. He's very, he always impressed with generals when you see all of the regalia that they have and the medals. You wonder where the blue would get the medals from. But he was a very good speaker, and his theory, in actual fact, was good. It was modern warfare, and he brought it to the full. And I think he would have saved a lot of lives. Yes, he was very. But that's about the only time we ever used to see him. He would have a lecture for something like that, and he would draw all NCOs for to get it over. But I can't remember ever any senior rank or above brigadier ever visiting the force. May have, right? But we were never.
Were you being sent on courses whilst you were with the 17th?
Oh, and hundreds of courses. In fact, the army spent thousands of pounds on me. When I was at the depot at Advanceth, I went on a sectional aid course to in York, Strensel. There's a big barracks there. I did a small arms course at Bisley. Well, Bisley, it was called, what do you call that? The next town to Folkestone. The Hythe. It was called the Hythe Wing. Now, the Hythe training school was at Hythe, but it got stooped. I see that then again, it must have been information passed to the Germans. They were forever getting dive bombed, so they moved them to Bisley. And I went on a 6-week course there, a small arms course. That was a very good course, that.
What did it entail exactly?
Weapon training, firing weapons, all sorts of weapons. And the beauty about that is They would say, this is a 36 grenade, this is how it works and all that. There you are, throw it. This is an anti-tank rifle. There you are, right, fire it. With all there so you could fire it. I got a very good report off that. And if I, one interesting thing here, I never shaved up till that time. I was only a boy, see, and I never shaved. And I was on parade this day, it wasn't the first parade, but it was one parade I was on, and we were getting inspected by, this chap was out of the Highland Regiment. I always had a beautiful, great big stag's head for a badge. And I was in the front rank. He went down the front rank, never said anything, and as he went inspecting the rear of us, he started yelling, why haven't you shaved? Well, I took it on blowing notice because I didn't shave. And in fact, it was me who was talking to him. He must have seen the little fluff. The sun must have been shining on the fluff. So from that day on, I had to shave. But I got a very good report of that officer. I was keen, you know, young and daft. I've been on courses for gas training, and that was mostly done at Hythe. And there they used to actually give you the gas, put the mustard gas on your hands and show you how to take it off and all that. Put you in the chambers. I did a battle course. You call this place, it was somewhere in Abbott's Cliff, I think they called it. It was a big abbey. And the course, it was a battle course, and we were in a riding school up on the moors. And I always remember there, the colonel there was, he was nearly 7 foot, he was out of the Highland Regiment. And the first day we prayed, he says, this is the last time you'll walk. He says, from now on, you double all the time. He said, if you can't walk, and you've had it. And from in that particular course, we had to take 10 denim suits. 10, you know. You wish you were born in the army. Yeah, we had to take 10 because you no sooner were out of the barracks or out of this riding school, and you walked out there in motor water. In fact, we used to go out with our wore shirts or socks and we wore boots and these denims. That was a battle course where they did fire live ammunition at you. But then again, as I've said before, we knew they weren't trying to hit you. But they used to fire it over your head, let you know, you know, getting to know the sound of it. Because sound plays a lot of saving lives in action.
And this is where you were learning these new methods of attack.
Yes, this was the battle term. And also working as a section. You see, you had to work as a section to get over a lot of the obstacles. I mean, you come up against a 10-foot wall, but you couldn't get over there yourself. You had to be lifted up, and you had to pull the next one up and this sort of thing. And I always remember on that particular course, we had to cross a river with a rope, and they had a thing, I think they call them sticky grenades. It was like a big lollipop, and it was in a steel case, and they used to flick this, and the steel case used to come off, and underneath was a grenade thick with glue, and you were supposed to rope it against the tank and stick it on the side of the tank. If you're foolhardy, like. First thing, if you saw a tank, just go the other way. Nevertheless, as we were going across the river, they were flinging these blowing things in the water, and they were flowing down, chopping your legs out of it. And when we got to the other side, we had to pick up boxes of ammunition. And, I mean, ammunition's heavy to carry if you carry a box full. We had to carry this ammunition. They put this choking gas. We had to go through this choking gas. Oh, what a terrible. I don't know what the poor devils were like in the Great War. I'm being gassed.
Were you taught infiltration tactics? Were you taught infiltration tactics to get through an enemy?
Oh, yes, you taught everything. On that particular course, one night they put you all in a truck and sealed you in so you couldn't see where you were going. And they would drop you off, and they'll give you, you know, a route to take. And they had these brain guns on fixed lines with tracer going, which is a few times that you used to see tracer, with the tracer going. And you had to find, you would have a network of brain guns firing in various angles. And you had to find a way through there. Of course, you always had an instructor with you. If you were going to do something daft, he used to stop you, because he knew the way the trucks to go through. But it was all very good training.
Were there accidents?
Yes, we always, well, we used to call it the bone wagon, the ambulance. You used to say, here's the bone wagon coming. That always used to follow you whenever you went out on these schemes. And I think they were allowed 5% casualties. They didn't have any when I was there, Lee, but I presume they might have had some. Now, they had a platoon of sergeants, and they had a platoon of officers. Then you had the competition again of, you know, we're going to be better than them, and you had this spirit that which is good at training. And we used to compete against the officers. Mine was all live ammunition they used to fire, but there were targets. You know, you had to attack a certain place and there were various targets, or they would pull a rope and a target would appear. There were all sorts of training like that.
Street fighting, did that come into it? Did you do any street fighting?
Yes, yes. They used to take you into villages and show you how to clear a house. And
how do you clear a house?
Well, the first thing they throw a grenade. The best thing they would throw a grenade in. They'd throw a grenade in, and you had to dive through the door and get away from the door as quickly as possible. You had to veer to one or dive through and roll over out the way, because they had targets in the corner of these buildings. The target used to flip up, just like an enemy would probably be behind a steel door or something like that, expecting somebody to come through the door. And he would fire at the door, but your aim was to get through the door and away from it as quick as possible.
So the training methods had been improved enormously since the days when you started.
Yes. Oh, this battle drill, it was very good. Mine, it was very hard to do. I mean, you were forever run, and that's all it was, doubling all the time. I mean, if enemy fired on you, the first thing that happened was everybody used to go to the ground. Then the company commander or the platoon commander, who it was, would say, right, number, well, we'll say it, take a platoon. Number 3 second, do a right, what do you call it? Had a proper name for it. But you would have a swing off to the right and go so that the enemy couldn't see. He'd go right round behind them. They had a special name for that, I'll just forget it now.
And again, did you have tanks in these training?
No, not on that course.
Infantry.
No, not on that course. No.
And any other courses that you attended?
I was not blowing many. When I was in Palestine, I attended a battle course there. Drill course. I was at a drill course at. I think I was at Central Barracks as well. There's a drill course at Central Barracks. And that was done, the guardsmen, guards NCOs used to take you there. But see that they had all different sergeants from different regiments. They all had different speeds of travel. They went, I mean, I was miles away before the other guys. In fact, when I was in the TA, the company commander in Chester Street, on the Armistice Parade, now I used to say to the parade commander, now you either let us go first or last, which has it got to be? If he said first, well, it was all right. If he said last, we used to let everybody get, trying to march behind the Salvation Army, well, you know, would overrun them in 3 seconds flat.